From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Vote counting continues in California. As of 6 a.m. New York time, there were still 1.39 million uncounted ballots. More than half of those provisional ballots issued to those who, for some reason or another, did not appear to be eligible on the rolls at the polling stations. Clinton's lead has shrunk to the current level of 467,000 votes, with 691,000 provisional ballots still to be opened. As those primarily represent those with no party preference, they are expected to heavily favor Sanders when they're counted in polls prior to the election and in Election Day exit polls. Sanders outpolled Clinton among non-party preference voters. As we've reported earlier, if the exit polls across the primary season were to be believed, Sanders should have enough pledged delegates to win a first ballot victory at the Philadelphia convention next month. Nevertheless, he appeared in an internet broadcast last night to be moving further towards endorsing Clinton.
The major political task that together we face in the next 5 months is to make certain that Donald Trump is defeated and defeated badly. And I personally intend to begin my role in that process in a very short period of time. But defeating Donald Trump cannot be our only goal. We must continue our grassroots effort to create the America that we know we can become. And we must take that energy into the Democratic National Convention on July 25th in Philadelphia, where we will have more than 1,900 delegates.
On the Republican side, the calls have been broadening for Trump to step down or for an effort to quote-unquote dump Trump. This is RT America's Ed Schultz leading a discussion about that Thursday.
Let's bring in a conservative panel tonight across the board. We got Ernie White, political analyst, radio talker Heidi Harris is with us, and Sarah Westwood, reporter of the Washington Examiner. Sarah, we'll start with you tonight. Good to have you with us. From your reporting, now we know that the Republicans can go to the convention and totally change the rules, do whatever they want to do. This is the way the world turns. What are the chances of the dump Trump crowd really mounting a charge at the convention and something happening if these numbers keep up?
It's still pretty slim, Ed. I mean, you look at what happened in the primaries. Donald Trump earned more votes than any candidate had in history from the Republican primary. He's still really popular among his core group of Republicans. And if the Republican Party weakened itself by trying to get him off the top of the ticket after he won the nomination fair and square, then they would give up any prayer of defeating Hillary Clinton in the general election, while right now they still have an outside chance if they stick with Donald Trump.
So, Heidi Harris, is this a dice that the Republicans are going to roll? Do you think they're going to do it? These numbers are borderline embarrassing, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they're not great. And he wasn't my, how many people? 17? He wasn't my 18th or 21st choice either. But the fact is, to Sarah's point, there are tons of people who love him. And if you disenfranchise him, which is how they'll feel, then those people aren't going to vote at all. They're not going to vote for whoever you put in place. That's the danger of it. So ultimately, a lot of what will happen between now and November is going to depend on national events. I mean, obviously, Florida is a factor and some of the things that Trump has said versus Hillary. And if anything else happens nationally or internationally and Trump seems stronger to some people or some folks that might come over to his side. But was he the best choice? Of course not. Of course he wasn't the best choice. But if you try to dump him at the convention, you're going to disenfranchise a lot of people who are just flat out not going to go to the polls, and they sure as hell will not vote for Hillary either.
Ernie White, how does Trump recover from these numbers? Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. And Trump's going to recover from these numbers because I'm starting to call him Teflon Trump. I mean, Trump seems to always every week have some type of issue, but he always pulls it off. These numbers are going to be okay. First of all, the Republican Party, the GOP, the establishment, what I call the private club, their problem is they won't get behind Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the only candidate that's ever won the nomination, but yet has not won the nomination because, again, the GOP will not stand behind Donald Trump. They do not want Donald Trump. It is a private club. I've been talking about this for a long time on your show. It's a private club, both the Republican and Democrat Party. Neither party wants Donald Trump. Donald Trump is fighting an uphill battle. The people have voted. They want Donald Trump. That is their nominee. Donald Trump will recover from this. And again, I'm so sorry to hear that this is all about gun control, what happened in Orlando. This is about Islam, radical Islam, again, attacking Americans and attacking people around the world.
Let's talk about that. Donald Trump is now saying that mosques should be under surveillance. Here it is.
We aren't vigilant and we aren't smart. And we have to go and we have to maybe check respectfully the mosques, and we have to check other places, because this is a problem that if we don't solve it, it's going to eat our country alive.
Ernie, does that work for the American people?
I think you're talking about common sense. And right now, I don't know if we remember this, but we are at war with some Islamic countries, and yet we are bringing them over here, their people, their men, not just women and children, but their strong men. They're not being vetted, and the American public, I think, is afraid right now. What happened in Orlando can happen anywhere. So we need some common sense approaches, and that means watching what's going on right now.
And of course, the president and Donald Trump went back and forth this week on the term radical Islamic terrorism. Sarah Westwood on Capitol Hill, does that play well with Republicans?
It does. It's something that actually Ted Cruz pioneered in the primaries, and Donald Trump sort of made it his own now that he's the nominee. But President Obama came out after that and tried to say, you know, these aren't magic words. Saying the words radical Islamic terrorism isn't going to change anything. But what Donald Trump is getting at and what most Republicans are getting at is that we have to recognize where the problem is coming from. And in the case of Omar Mateen, there were some common sense steps that did not take place for fear of harming multiculturalism. And so there are things that need to be done. Obviously, saying we need to surveil mosques is an indelicate way of putting it. But if there are suggestions that there are pockets of people where radicalization is taking place, obviously steps need to be taken to address those institutions, and that's something that most Republicans do agree on.
All right, Heidi, since I've known you for a long time, I'm going to take you into the Twilight Zone and say one name, Mitt Romney. What about
it? No, no, Ed, no, Mitt Romney. You know, I feel like I'm opening the fridge and I pull the foil off and I go, oh, leftovers again. No, thank you. I don't want Mitt Romney. I think he's a nice man. I think he's a smart guy, but we've already said we don't want him. It didn't work. The establishment cannot cram him down our throat at this point. It won't work. No, no.
For more on all that, we spoke with our regular political commentator, Professor Tony Montero from Philadelphia via Skype Friday. Professor Montero, pleasure to speak with you as always.
Yes, it's a pleasure to speak to you, Don.
I'm just watching what's happening in the election right now with my jaw in my lap, literally. The media is doing everything it can to align whatever forces they can against Trump. I've never seen that before, and it seemed to be joined by much of the Republican Party.
Yes, definitely. And the united front of the ruling class against Trump is not just against the movement that he represents, and also against the movement that he represents. Because at the end of the day, these are class politics being played out in a very unique, people often refer to it as populism. It is that in the sense that it does not have what we would call an ideologically clear and committed leadership. But at the end of the day, and in an objective sense, these are class politics, and the divisions are along class, political, and ideological lines. And the two movements, and I want to emphasize the movements, are objectively unraveling the two-party system. In fact, I would argue that the country is becoming ungovernable. And this is the positive, objective outcome of these two movements and why the ruling class is in panic mode at this time.
Watching with Sanders, for example, we spoke with Bob Fitrakis, the attorney, professor of political science out in Ohio that does a lot of election theft litigation. And he was looking at the exit polls and using the exit polls calculated that Sanders should have won enough delegates to win on the first ballot at the convention. Mm-hmm. So that's what was stolen. And he said that's actionable and he could well prevail. So Sanders making like he's about to endorse Clinton and all of that seems pretty premature.
Yes, I think so. And I think Sanders is in a situation where he really does not know how to play this at this time, because he is being pressurized from two opposing sides, the Clinton side and the side of the people who got him to where he is. And if you notice in his statements, he is ambiguous, contradictory, and uncertain. I think he's, you know, trying to play for time right now. And I think he knows what many, many people are saying, that not only is the system rigged, but that the Clinton forces from the very beginning have stolen votes throughout this country. And probably he did win enough delegates to win on the first ballot.
And you know, forgetting for a moment where that litigation could go and should go. I mean, you know, I'm remembering both Al Gore refusing to allow people to address the theft of the election on the floor of the joint session where it gets ratified, and also John Kerry, who promised that he had 95 lawyers, that wasn't, you know, I'm not going to allow what happened in 2000 to happen again, folding right away after it was stolen in Ohio. And Sanders now, you know, just walking away almost from what looks like a stolen election.
Right. Well, but see, the difference between Al Gore and John Kerry and what happened in those elections is that you have a movement, an insurgent movement. And in fact, you have two insurgent movements. And as you know, Don, this is what I have emphasized throughout this period. You have to focus upon these movements. And again, these movements represent a form and an emerging form of class politics, which are unraveling and disrupting the system of political management and control. At the end of the day, these movements are not going anywhere. Trump could leave the stage of history. Sanders could bow to the pressure of the Democratic Party and of Wall Street and so on. But these movements are not about to fold up their tents and go home. In fact, you will see here in Philadelphia a demonstration during the convention of the power of these movements. And I think, finally, that these movements will come together. There will be some form of reconciliation of the two sides based upon the common class essences of the two movements.
You know, you can see that happening on the other side. There's an awareness, obviously, among the ruling class that what you're saying is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a consolidation. You know, the condition up until now, at least the public condition, has been that the elites of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are completely and totally inconsistent. They're incompatible. Mm-hmm. The Republicans are evil to the Democrats. The Democrats are evil to the Republicans. And now you see, though, a unity, a voice almost among the Republican and Democratic leadership against Trump and also a unified movement, essentially, the Clinton people trying to bring the Republicans in to replace the Sanders people.
Well, and you know, Sanders, while claiming to wanting to unite the Democratic Party to defeat Trump, is using some of the language that Trump uses. For example, Trump said a couple of weeks ago that he, if elected in 5 or 10 years, wanted to transform the Republican Party into a workers' party. Last evening, Bernie Sanders said that he wants to transform the Democratic Party into a workers' party. Now, you know, I find it interesting, sometimes laughable, that Bernie is trying to walk this thin line, being a loyal Democrat, quote unquote, and at the same time arguing for a radical transformation of the Democratic Party in the same way that Trump is calling for a radical transformation. Well, Trump is calling for the destruction of the Republican Party and the building of something new. You know, we're in that great period in the history of our country where the ruling class is panicking. It is far more aware of its class interests than the working masses are, but an emerging consciousness among the broad masses of working people. And this goes across race and ethnic and religious lines. And these are movements driven by the people, not organized from above. And that's what I find deeply fascinating and really a cause for great optimism.
You have two major impediments to achieving that unity. The first being just the history and legacy of racism in the United States, yeah, and the fact of it. It's not even just a legacy, unfortunately. If you're looking at an organism and trying to communicate, you need some sort of means of communication, and those are entirely in the hands of the ruling class, and they are being deployed in a way that I've never seen before, except maybe at the Iraq War when that began, or at 9/11. And so how exactly do we help, you know, move towards achieving some kind of unity?
Well, you know, you're right about the existence of racism and its long history in the United States. But what is also true, that no country has had a longer, more intense fight against white supremacy and racism than has the United States. And even among those people who are following Trump, a part of his movement, they are not unaffected by the long history of the fight against white supremacy and the leadership in that given by the African-American people. Now, in that framework, where do people who are now beginning to stand up and fight for their class and economic interests look for role models of where to go? They have nowhere to look but to the civil rights movement, to the likes of Martin Luther King, Muhammad Ali, and so on and so forth, in how to stand up and fight. So, yes, there is white supremacy. Yes, it is the great obstacle towards unity and struggle. But at the same time, there is that history of the fight against white supremacy. So I think that, again, the economic and political crisis is unprecedented in the history of this country. In May, only, according to official statistics, only 38,000 jobs were created, and probably when they relook at it, maybe no jobs were created. We're on the cusp of what could be another deep recession. You know, you read the financial pages and what hedge funds are doing and what the bond markets are doing, and it does not look good. And another recession in the middle of this type of election could be catastrophic for the ruling class of this country. And I think that's what they're looking at.
And, you know, there's another interesting element to this, which is only I saw the first evidence of it yesterday. And that was, a super PAC, a PAC-run commercial attacking Hillary Clinton rather effectively. It showed Bill and Hillary Clinton essentially involved in some of their more famous lies that, I mean, they didn't say it, I don't think, as a tagline, but it fits right in with Trump's Lying Hillary campaign. And it's very persuasive, and it's being played a lot. And I'm assuming that that's only the opening salvo or just an opening shot in what's going to be a salvo of attacks. And she already has negatives that approach his, and people are saying he has no chance to win because of his negatives. And so with that happening and a crisis, economic crisis developing that will be tagged on Obama and obviously Clinton by association, you could have Trump winning anyway. So what would the fallback game be for the ruling elite at that point?
Well, I think, first of all, it is very difficult for anyone to predict the outcome of the general election. Now, and we have to put in parentheses that Clinton has not yet won the nomination, that she is being dogged by these by the fact that millions of people feel that the elections, the primaries, were stolen. So that's a big problem for her. And not to mention the emails and the FBI investigation and the Hillary and Bill Clinton Foundation scandals. I think even more important than what individual wins the presidency is the fact that the nation is becoming increasingly ungovernable. And by that I mean that the leadership, the political leadership, and the economic oligarchs that run the economy are increasingly seen as illegitimate by the people. And that is what these high negatives for both Trump and Clinton represent, a growing illegitimacy. Now, if you think their negatives are high, look at the negatives for the Congress.
Right.
They're off the charts.
Right.
So, and then you take the corporate media.
Right.
All of the instruments of power and control are being seen as illegitimate by the masses of people. It's what we call a legitimacy crisis. It is a breakdown of the normal processes of governance of the society. And that is always the start of a great transformation, a shift of power from one class to the next.
Which political scientists generally call a revolution. So the crisis is essentially a potentially revolutionary crisis.
Absolutely. And see, here is where I differ from a lot of the Sanders people who say the country is ripe for a right-wing revolution. I think they get it wrong. I think the country is ripe for a upsurge of the people demanding a transition of power from the ruling class elites to the people. We are looking at, and you know, I can't be absolutely certain, but I think what we are looking at is the beginning of a new type of democratic revolution in the country, a radical transition of power from the elites who have been in power essentially and ruled and configured power essentially in this way from the time of the Cold War. So we're looking at 70 years of a particular type of political rule that I think is being challenged at a fundamental level. And what I think we will see is a democratic transition, a democratic reconfiguration. And by democracy, I mean it in its generic sense, the rule of the people. And that's what the people are demanding. Now, of course, you know, there will be people will seek out compromise. People will seek the less difficult path to this transition. But nonetheless, objectively, what we are looking at is the beginning of a transition from one form of power and management of the society to another form, from the rule of war and oligarchic elites to a rule of the people.
You know, finally, the points on Clinton's vulnerability certainly took a jump up in credibility with the announcement by Julian Assange that WikiLeaks was in possession of plenty of materials that could well produce an indictment, or in any event should. And also with the news that Russia was apparently or is allegedly spying on the DNC, we have, of course, the fact that Clinton's emails were all on a server that was unsecured, on a private server. Mm-hmm. And so one can only assume that Russia, China, and a number of others have the complete set of emails. So is it possible that we're going to see a dump of these things, perhaps strategically, to take her out?
I think so. I think, you know, I think there might be more whistleblowers out there than we know about who will surface in the next 5 months or so. And whistleblowing is now not just so isolated. There are probably whistleblowers who had access to the private servers that Hillary had in her house, but they're whistleblowers at the DNC. And that's not to mention the hackers who are all over the world. And these things are insecure, and they can't really be absolutely secured or encrypted. So, the discrimination of the ruling class and of the Clintons is an ongoing and intensifying process. And it's part of the discrimination among the masses of the leading forces of the capitalist control of the society. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. I mean, I think, Don, that too many people are talking around these issues rather than getting at the essence of them. The left is not yet able to get their heads around what exactly is happening. And from my point of view, it is a great upsurge of the people. It is a democratic upsurge. It has all of the problems that affect American society and the American working class historically, but nonetheless, it is an upsurge. It is a democratic mass movement. It is not a mass movement to establish, at least among the masses, to establish a right-wing oligarchy. It is, in fact, a movement against the right-wing oligarchy that has been running the country for the last 70 years.
Yeah, I need to follow that point up, because the left seems to be busy spending all of its time organizing against Trump rather than organizing against the theft of the election from Sanders, which would seem to me to be the focal point of their effort at this point in time. Why is that?
Mm-hmm. I think because of ideological unclarity, because the left is not a mature left, because the left is a knee-jerk left. It is not a strategic left. And again, it's not politically mature. Just like the broad mass movement is maturing, and I think the left will. That's my hope. And of course, discussions like the ones that we have been having could contribute possibly to that. And certainly, during the time of the convention, there are going to be forums and other things going on where these matters will be able to get discussed.
Professor Montero, thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.